Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take a look at the theater and arts that are based here in Chicago, coming into Chicago. But sometimes we are blessed to be able to have somebody join us who's known even much wider than the Chicago circle. And that is a playwright that's going to join us. You'll understand what I mean in just a moment. So recently I went to the Shattered Globe Theater over at Theater Wit on Belmont in the city. I see everything they do because I don't live far. I can walk. And so up now at Shattered Globe, by Shattered Globe, is a play called Ugly Lies the Bone. Now, here's the thing. Ordinarily, look, I know a few things about theater. I usually know what I'm getting into when I go there. And if not, I do some homework. And I decided for this show, I was not familiar with it. I'm going to be honest. And I decided not to do any homework. I decided I just wanted to go experience it. And see what it was all about. And that would be kind of fun for me. It was incredibly fun. And the second the show was over, I got to the PR people. And I went, I need to talk to these people because this show was amazing. And so not only do we get the playwright, Lindsay Ferrantino, who wrote this, among some other things you'll be familiar with, but Christina Gorman, who plays the lead, the character Jess, in this show, who's just, well, I guess you're off the stage a little bit here and there, but mostly we see you on stage. Tremendous job to you. And Lindsay, I'm imagining when you envision this, that Christina's giving you the performance. You said that's what this is about.
Yeah, I'm so excited that this play is happening right now in Chicago. I wish I could come see it. I have not been able actually to see it, but I've gotten to see some wonderful clips of it. But I am very much knee deep in Broadway world right now with their show about to open here, so I haven't been able to sneak away.
And again, I'm going to mention that, and Christina, we're going to get to the show in a second, but I have to mention that Lindsay is in New York right now working on Queen of Versailles, which I've been so excited for. It's kind of, the buzz has been around it for quite a while. I actually heard from one of the production team to sort of check my involvement with that show, whatever. That's a conversation for another day. It stars Kristen Chenoweth and F. Murray Abraham, and you guys are all over the place. And you know what? Can we, since I don't have to like really kick us off the clock, can you just very briefly, for folks on their way to New York or in New York, give us a quick rundown. What is Queen of Versailles all about? I hope that's Christina, and why people need to see it. It's a musical, of course.
Sorry, Christina. I didn't mean to plug my other show. It is playing at St. James Theater on Broadway. It is about a true story based on the 2012 documentary of the same title, Queen of Versailles, about a Florida billionaire family trying to build the largest house in America, which is a replica of the Palace of Versailles that they are building in Orlando, and the sort of rise and fall and rise again of this family pursuing the biggest scale version of the American dream.
Yeah, really, I can't, it sounds so intriguing. And what a cast, F. Murray Abraham, Kristen Chenoweth, come on. Was this your idea to do it, or did people approach you, Lindsay, to say, we need you to kind of write this?
It was my idea. I was obsessed with the documentary when I saw it many years ago. And then I'm from Florida, and Ugly Lies the Bone is also set in Florida. And the Siegel family, the doc is about, started buying up pieces of my hometown. So they were he's known as the timeshare king. So he buys properties and turns them into timeshares. So they bought the pier in my hometown, and they bought a hotel in my hometown. And so they were just in the local papers a lot. And I was obsessed with the story. And the characters are so larger than life, and the scale and ambition of what they're trying to do is so over the top that it felt to me like a musical. Yeah,
I love it. You could throw the Meisner brothers in there, but Sondheim tried that. Don't go there. Yeah. It just didn't work out real well for him. And of course, you're working on so many things that are being turned into movies on the life of Hugh Hefner. You've worked with Adrian Brody. I mean, just an amazing career. And I'm going to use a New York Times comment about your work to come to Christina for a reaction to it, because the New York Times said about you that you, Lindsay, have a muscular empathy which seeks to enter the minds of people for whom life is often a struggle of heroic proportions. That phrase couldn't be any more accurate from my view, Christina, when you took on the role of Jess in Ugly Lies the Bone.
Yeah, I think that's apt. Getting really in depth with people who are going through it and kind of shining the light in a very nuanced way of the struggles that our characters are going through, specifically Jess, but pretty much everyone is on their own journey here. And it's visceral and it's intimate and muscular. I love that too. So yeah, I would completely agree.
She was also described, by the way, as having a moral compass second to none. So that fits in here as well. But Christina, let me come to you. Even though Lindsay wrote it, talk to me about what is the plot for people who haven't seen it. I had not done my homework, and that was really wrong on my part, because this is not, this play has been at National Theater. I mean, this play has been around, and I should have known more than I did. But I'm fessing up. Christina, what is this play all about for people who have not yet made their way to Shattered Globe at Theater Wit?
So it's the story of Jess, kind of, and she is a I almost said Vietnam, Afghanistan vet. She did three tours in Afghanistan, and she was massively injured in an IED explosion. And it's the story of her kind of coming back to her hometown in Florida and trying to kind of get back to the life she thought she knew and wanted while dealing with. She's got PTSD, so she's dealing with the emotional aspects of what it means to be in war, as well as dealing with the physical aspects. And she has mobility issues, she's got massive burns and grafts, and so she's going through it. And kind of how she's getting back to her family and friends, and yeah, I think it's a story, even if you haven't lived her experience, I think you can find a lot of empathy in these characters, even characters you think might be a little shady. I think there's all kind of shades of gray and real empathy in this piece.
And of course, she has a sister, and the sister has a boyfriend, and Jess has an old boyfriend, past boyfriend, and there's a mom. And so we see this world of characters that are there. The reason I said it could have been Vietnam is because I guess I identify it because while I was a kid during those days, I had relatives who went through the PTSD and left the family, all sorts of things. So I connected from a previous war, but it's not as though this didn't happen in previous wars. So, Lindsay, at first, before I educated myself and just went in, I wondered whether this had been written by perhaps a veteran who had gone through all of that, whatever. That's not the case, but I'm guessing you know these characters.
Yeah, well, the play is set in my hometown in Florida. And I grew up there and went away to college at the same time that the shuttle program was ending. This is like a town on the Space Coast. So the main industry in the area was military and the shuttle program at NASA. And so when that program closed, in addition to the 2008 financial collapse, the area was just like economically devastated, and anyone who could leave did. And my best friend from high school became a trauma therapist at a VA center in the area. And we were just having a lot of conversations about the area and the veterans coming back to the area, both looking for a way to start over. And that there was this interesting parallel between the two. So I just started doing a lot of research and talking to veterans and spending time in VA centers and came across this. What was new at the time is more commonplace now. VR pain, virtual reality pain management therapy, which at the time was being tested in veteran centers across the country to treat veterans coming back from the wars of Afghanistan and Iraq, who are coming back with these unprecedented injuries before. Whereas in previous wars, these injuries might have actually killed them. That now they weren't, but there was sort of no. There was just no history on how to treat pain at these new levels. So, once I found that VR therapy, the play sort of like clicked for me.
And by the way, I never like to give secrets away from a play, so I'm glad you mentioned the VR because I don't know how you don't. But at the same time, I'd hate to say that and have you go, "Oh no, I don't want people to know that." But
Yeah, it's
we're
okay.
into it
Probably
from the
in the
beginning.
blurb.
So, Christina, let's do one piece of magic because it's going to lead to another question. The audience actually has the experience of that VR thing going on as we sit in the audience. I'm guessing that Jess does. I mean, when we're watching you, that Jess does not. That's not actually happening for you, right? You're performing.
Yes, does, but Christina does not know.
Okay, it was yeah, and that's what. So let me ask. Can you talk about how did you get ready for that? Because we in the audience are experiencing what we know Jess is experiencing, but the actor Christina, I'm guessing, is looking at a blank or a black kind of space. What's happening in your head? How do you make? It's what a good actor is about, but how do you make that happen?
Well, two things. I'm not a video gamer, so I've never really experienced that, except one time I went over to a friend's and he had the whole thing. So I had a little bit of experience with VR headsets before, and I do remember that kind of first experience and being like, whoa. So just kind of tapping into the kind of firsts of that was super helpful, especially when Jess is going through it for the first time. And then ultimately, just pure imagination. I mean, a lot of the VR world is set in a incredibly idyllic forests with trees and snow. And I grew up in the Hudson Valley region of upstate New York. And so kind of that feeling of winter and snow and quiet, all of that was very easy for me to kind of draw on. And then of course, when you get into tech and you're seeing all the beautiful work that our projection designer did, that kind of helps you build up the world as well.
And I got to tell you, Lindsay, you haven't seen it, so I'll just tell you. I mean, Theater Wit is kind of some small spaces and stuff, but boy, these folks make it work. I mean, you've got a 7-Eleven kind of store there, one of those kind of stores there. You've got an apartment. I mean, you've got the roof of a house. I mean, they're making all of this work within
They
that
are.
space, which I think is really amazing. And Lindsay, let me ask you about these characters. This sister, what are these fictional characters for you, or when you wrote it, were you saying, no, that's I know who exactly who that is. I know who the boyfriend is, and
I mean, the characters are fiction, but they're definitely, based on composites of people that I've known, both through research and also just from my own life.
is there a strategy as well? We never, I think I could say this, we never actually see the therapist involved. We hear her, but we don't see her. That obviously is a conscious decision on your part. Why don't you want us to see her? Is there, or is it distracting? What would be the reason of saying you're not going to see this person?
Well, I feel like you'd have to see the play to understand it, but I felt like the VR sessions were really about Jess's experience of the VR and not necessarily of, I didn't, once you put a person on stage and an actor in that role, you have to sort of develop a whole relationship for them. And I felt like the point of those scenes was about her experience in this alternate reality and not about a complicated relationship with a doctor. And I felt like the And that is also, to me, mirrored the emotional experience of these VR, the VR therapy, because it really is just you alone in these landscapes and you alone with your thoughts and you alone in this headset. It's a very actually isolating experience. So it felt to, I think it would have felt disingenuous to write a scene in which she's like deeply interacting with the doctor, because also most of the time that the VR therapy is being tested, you are just alone with someone sort of observing from an outside point of view. They're not in the therapy with you. So, for all those reasons. And then it's always been a conscious choice that the mom character is the same person who doubles as the voice of the doctor. And that obviously has thematic, without giving the whole show away, but thematic resonance in that the mom relationship actually ultimately ends up being more therapeutic and that there's a sort of maternal quality to the therapy. So I feel like that, thematic, reflexivity or whatever was interesting to me. I don't know if that
And
makes sense.
thank you for going through that because, again, I don't usually get the playwright here. And so what that tells me is obviously these are questions you wrestled with, right? I imagine there might have been a time that you went, well, do I want the therapist there? What will I have there?
I'm
Making the
sure.
decisions that you made, which is no, I don't want to get into that relationship and that dynamic. And Christina, the relationship between you and your sister, and of course she has this boyfriend, again, trying not to step on too many grounds, but something about him irks you. And even Jess, I mean, irks Jess. And even Jess sort of says there's something about you, but you can't put her finger exactly on it. Is that, I'm wondering, see, I went through this play, and for me, everything was about this post-war experience and life that Jess was living. And from your nodding, I guess it was. But at the same time, would the Jess prior to that war experience, would you be having that same reaction to this boyfriend? Was there something more to it? Or this is the impact of war?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think as we were talking about in the rehearsal room, Jess uses humor often to mask some like pain she's going through or vulnerability she's feeling. I think that probably has always been part of Jess's DNA, but it just has gotten even more so, having gone through the trauma she's seen overseas. Certainly, her interactions with Kelvin, I feel the same. I think she would maybe be a little bit more patient and open before her experiences, but I think she would have a point of view about him and how I think my sister could probably do better. I think she would probably feel that way before having gone through what she went through. I just think having gone through war, coming back, I mean, she says in the play, in a VR session, how people are always talking and they don't say anything of substance. They're talking about the most inane things. And when you've gone through something life-changingly traumatic, you have sometimes, especially when you're going through physical and emotional trauma, you have very little patience for someone who's, from her point of view, has very little substance and could be potentially toxic for a loved one, I think is how I'd respond to that.
You tell Talbot early on that this comment about having something to him. So if we take it out, can you identify, like, what is it about him that is triggering Jess? I mean, I'm not sure what he did. I mean, he's just kind of there.
I immediately went to humor, and I'm not going to say what I'm going to say. Forget that. I'm so snobby New Yorker, and my parents have, they're snowbirds now, so they go down to Florida, but it's Fort Lauderdale. So
Is it a class thing?
it's not a class thing, but there's, the stereotype and the memes of Florida man. Have you heard of this? He definitely like epitomizes that trope. But no, I think
I had an office in Boca Raton for 12 years, so I do know what you're talking about.
it's Florida. Florida's lovely, and the weather alone. Oh my
Right.
gosh. I've
That's why
never been
all New
to
Jersey
Miami.
goes there.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Miami for sure. I think what's interesting is her first reaction to Kelvin is not something we see on stage. She has already met Kelvin before we see kind of the second interaction. So I think we talked a lot about like she was, first of all, feeling incredibly vulnerable and walks into kind of a surprise party, a welcome back party. And that's like the last thing she needed at that moment. So when you're already on the back foot and feeling very vulnerable, and then having to meet your sister's boyfriend for the first time, and him feeling to her a little bit not right for her sister, I think that first impression kind of landed and was hard to dispel. And whether or not that first impression is something she keeps with her at the end of the play or not remains to be seen. You'll have to see the play.
As I did, and it's amazing. Lindsay, I'm going to come to Lindsay. And by the way, we, the audience, are invited to that party because, and I'm not sure, Lindsay, if this is your call or whether Shattered Globe is doing this, but the program that we're given that goes in essentially includes an invitation to this party. And of course, being, did you not know that?
No.
So that's not anything you called
Cool.
for.
No, that's so cool.
Okay. So, and of course, I being the idiot that I am, and I was running late, so I got in there, I'm reading this thing. I thought we were being invited to a cast party afterwards. And so I'm
Oh.
reading this thing, but the date on it is in July, and I'm like, what? What? And then I
That's
figured
so
it.
cool.
Yeah, I figured it out. Oh, we should get you a copy
Cool
of it.
touch. Yeah, that's awesome.
Christina, make sure we get her a copy.
That's awesome.
I'll talk to the PR folks. Anyway, Lindsay, so here's what's great. Risky for Christina, but here's what's great. You just heard her explanation of that relationship and whatever. As you listened, are you sitting there going, yeah, that's the playwright's intent? Or are you going, what are you talking about?
No. What are you talking? No, I think I always love when actors think of things. And it's whatever it is. But I think I agree. I think the in my mind, it's the one character that we see her interact with in the play that didn't know her before her injuries. And so he is also meeting her in a different way because he is only seeing the injured version of her, which she's obviously extremely self-conscious about. And everyone else that she interacts with has a history with her and can see both the person she was before the trauma and the person who she is after. He only knows the person who she is after. And so I do think that there's a certain amount of distrust that she has of him just straight from the beginning, which is also part of her own defense mechanism. And also she doesn't know him, and also he presents in a certain way. And I think, one of the bigger themes of the play, well, the title of the play, Ugly Lies the Bone, comes from this Albert Einstein quote, which is, I haven't said it in a long time. Ugly, wait, what is it? Beauty is but skin deep. Ugly lies the bone. Beauty dies and fades away, but ugly holds its own, which is attributed to Albert Einstein. Who knows if he actually said this like thing, but I sort of, when I wrote the play, had that, I remember having that like on my desk as the theme of the play, in that it isn't just about Jess and how she presents to the world and people having to realize that they've misunderstood her based on appearances, but it's all of the characters are judged first for their appearances in a certain way and then surprise you in another. And I think that's one of the bigger, that's all the characters in the play, hopefully not just Jess.
And I'm going to stick with you on this, Lindsay. I want to bring in sort of Jess's ex to this because the way that character here, kudos to you because these characters get pretty, other than the psychologist, these characters get developed. And they didn't have to be. I mean, you could have looked at the ex and kept him where he is, doing what he's doing, and he never kind of emerges out of that kind of persona, but he does, and Jess knows what she's dealing with. What can you talk a little bit about what the design was in saying, I want the audience to have her experience familial wise in terms of sister, and sister boyfriend wise, who didn't, who doesn't really know her ahead of time, but you bring in the ex-boyfriend. What purpose is he serving for the play for you?
I think it's all wrapped up in her different identities and her identity as, there's her identity as a soldier and her identity as a daughter and her identity as a sister, and then also her identity as a woman, and that maybe this is the last person that she, this is definitely the last person that she had romantic relationship with, the last person who probably saw her naked. Do you know what I mean? In a way that she felt good about her body.
And we hear about that. I mean, that's part of the dialogue.
Yeah, and feeling like that in her search for finding herself again post injury and post tour, trying to, he's so appealing to her because he represents that old life. Not necessarily where he is now is not so appealing, but that he is this key to her past. And the romantic fantasy of that, because if she can get that from him, he has this thing that she needs, and or she thinks she needs, and if she can access that through him, then maybe that's the key to herself, you know? Well, she thinks that at least for a while.
And I'm going to go back to this phrase that the New York Times described you as this moral compass second to none, because Christina, in this relationship between Jess and Stevie,
Same time.
right? And I'm not giving anything away, but there's some things about sort of his status in life, what's going on in his life, that has to, as an audience member, I'm kind of going like, how good of a guy is he? Given what we know about him as he's interacting with you. But the thing is, you know this stuff too. So is it telling us anything about Jess, the fact that she's whatever she's trying to do here with this guy, she also knows what his status and situation in life is. You can give as much away as you want. That's as much as I'm gonna say.
Great. Well, I think Lindsay spoke to psychologically what she needs from him absolutely, like beautifully. And I think earlier when she was talking about the real life situation of the NASA, you know, that shutting down and the 2008 financial crisis, his status was different, you know, before she went away. I know I make like fun, flirty jokes about how he worked on a panini press, but we had also kind of talked about he was working his way up in NASA and was doing really well. And then all of this happened, and jobs are not, were not plentiful in 2008, and people were taking jobs kind of beneath their experience level and their previous lives. And like, this is where he's at, and he's trying to find his version of happiness too. I mean, he has that great monologue of like, well, if I get married, this is it, right? Or if I buy a house, this is it. Like, he's also searching too, because I'm sure he deeply feels kind of not pleased with kind of falling down a little bit, at least professionally. But I think there's a big, deep history between Jess and Stevie, and a loving history. So even though he might not be doing so well professionally at this moment, I won't piggyback off of what Lindsay spoke to beautifully. It's just she really needs a lot from him in this moment of like he represents to her everything kind of she lost, essentially.
Yeah.
Also, he didn't wait for her. You know what I mean? And he made a choice, and I don't think it's, I think he's also grappling with that choice that he made, whether that was the right choice for him, but he needed to make it for his own reasons. Do you know what I mean? To feel like his life was moving forward. And so I think they both are sort of satisfying a need for each other, but that can only get you so far,
Lindsay, I'm going to stay with you on this one. We do meet you've told us we meet the mom before the end of the show. And I will have to say that dynamic between mom and kids was especially tough for me to watch because I lost my mom to dementia, to Alzheimer's. And I think we can say that's what was going on here. Why did you choose to essentially, you're kind of ending the show in that world and with that point? For me, it kind of, was a gut punch because of my own experience. But how did you, as the playwright, did you say, I'm going to take it there, as opposed to you could have ended it with some, I don't know, big thing between Jess and Steve or something else. I don't know. They all have their
Well,
moments, but.
it felt to me that it's a play about a woman trying to find her identity and be recognized. I think she's trying to be recognized. And the fact that her mom has dementia, she thinks that her mom, that's the greatest fear, is not to be recognized by her mom. And there would be many reasons for her not to be recognized by her mom because her mom has dementia. So that's sort of like the most extreme example of her fear. And so I think she spends most of the play trying to be recognized by other people, but they sort of carry less emotional weight. And she's kind of like building up to being able to face the mom. And so by the end of the play, she is released and said goodbye and accepted in various ways these other relationships to be able to sort of have the strength to actually face the biggest fear of all. And then it, without giving the whole thing away, but goes in a totally different way than I think she would have expected.
I was going to say, because the way you end that topic, or the way you end that plot point, I have to say, is what allowed me to leave the theater with not only with comfort, but I walked out of the theater and my partner and I was the discussion sort of went there as I was sort of adding validation to a lot of what I had been seeing and whatever. And of course, the play is not about me, but it led me to talk about my life and things like that as we had that conversation leaving. Christina, how do you want when we walk out? I was going to wait for you to say hi afterwards, but there is so much going on with your makeup. I thought she's going to take her a while to get filled. She gets out here. And I have an old sick dog at home, so I had to go. But how do you want people to walk out? Do you want us talking about what I did, which is now I'm into discussing the Vietnam relatives, my mom's, I mean, I'm in that world, or is it like, nah, let's bring it up to the message of the show?
I think as long as people are talking about it, we've done our job well. I think what hits to every audience member is going to be differently, and we've no control over that. Some people have interpretations that are like, "Oh, that's very interesting. That's not what we were going with, but like, awesome. Like, I love that." But certainly, I think I would love for people to take away a feeling of, I would hope, catharsis and hope. I think I won't get too far into this, my soapbox here, but I think when things are looking bleak, I think if we could see a show like this where people are going through it and there's no neatly tied bow at the end of this play, so how you walk away with it is ultimately your call, but I do think there is a real thread of catharsis and hope that I'd love for the audience to feel as well.
And Lindsay, having the playwright here, I want to ask you that same question. You wrote this play, you had a mission in writing it. What do you want us talking about when we walk out?
Think I never, it's maybe not a good answer, but I never think about writing the play with like a specific feeling that I want to leave the audience with or a thesis. I feel like, but I do think that the main idea behind the play is, despite how you changed, you may feel from the outside that you're kind of still the same person on the inside. And that is a kind of trite statement, but I do think that she has to go through the whole play to realize that. And that is a universal thing, I think, that people go through, and lots, all the characters are going through it. Similar to, I would imagine, how audiences are going through it, and who are, and what does it mean to be known, and what does it mean to be known when you don't feel like you know yourself anymore, and when you feel so changed, are you still the same person? Can you ever go home again? When you leave your home and you have these experiences that change you, what does it mean to go back to your home? I feel like those are like the, to me, the sort of most interesting bedrock questions that the play is sort of built upon, and you know, what the audience takes from that is different, I'm sure, person to person.
Yeah. I should also add, my partner came up to Chicago from Florida. So that was a whole nother discussion.
Wow.
That was,
wow.
Yeah. Gainesville. So you can imagine what I got in a lot of trouble. I got in trouble with that discussion. All right. my final question, I'm going to come to Christina with you first, because you're an ensemble member of Shattered Globe. And for folks who maybe haven't seen a Shattered Globe production or something, I've seen so many, but you know, Shattered Globe's mission is to kind of redefine the relationship between the actor and audience and playwright. So can you talk to me as an actor? You can see I'm coming to you, Lindsay, but as an actor, Christina, why are you an ensemble member with Shattered Globe? You've been at Steppenwolf, you've been in lots of different, I could have ran through your whole bio here, Boho and Timeline, but what is special about Shattered Globe as an ensemble member?
Just the people, like, I think Chicago theater is based on, I mean, you mentioned Steppenwolf, on these very visceral ensemble-based storytelling. And I think we're all incredibly proud of that. And I love the people at Shattered Globe. Sandy Schinner, who's our artistic director, stewards our ship, and I love when we can all come together and tell a story kind of bigger than ourselves in a really truthful, visceral, intimate way. And that's always my favorite kind of theater to both watch as an audience member and to experience as an audience member. And that's what keeps me coming back for sure.
And you know, the audiences, so when I went in there, Lindsay, I'll tell you, I thought it was going to rain that night. It didn't. It was a Saturday night. And I had a U of I umbrella with me. I wasn't even thinking about it. So first I sit down, and Sandy Schinner, who's sitting in kind of in front of me, and she turns around and lets me know that she's taking my umbrella if it's raining out and, you know, whatever. So, okay, we got that fight going on. And then the guy behind me apparently is a Purdue fan. And so he leans over and starts talking about Purdue. And I don't even know why he's doing that, because I forgot that I had a U of I umbrella. My point is, Chicago audiences are very engaged and very observant and are among the best in the country. Lindsay, my question for you is, and I don't know the answer to this, did Shattered Globe approach you, or did you approach Shattered Globe to put on this production?
Yeah, they approached me. It had never been done in Chicago. They apparently had tried to get the rights some years back and not been able to. Who knows why? But yeah, no, they approached me about doing it. I'm so excited because I've not had a play ever done in Chicago, so it's very exciting for me.
Well,
That's
you
why
will.
I mean, I really do want to come. I would have absolutely come by now if it wasn't for Queen of Versailles. So I'm hoping you close the 15th, is it? Is it
Yeah.
15? I'm
Okay,
we
I'm going to say
open Queen
that
of
as
Versailles
well.
on the 9th, so hopefully I
By the
can get
way,
out there.
Christine, is that a good thing or a nerve-wracking thing? If somebody says, by the way, Lindsay's in the audience. I know it's like beautiful, the Carole King musical. The stars I've talked to who have done it, Abby Mueller and Jess Mueller and stuff, they all said they didn't want to know if she was in the audience. Same thing with 44, the musical. If Obama's sitting out there, we do not want. You want to know when she's there? Let's find out and we can tell
Okay,
Lindsay.
let's Obama and Carole King. I wouldn't put me in the same sentence as Obama
Well,
and Carole King.
for
I think you
Christina,
can
you might
handle
as well be. You might as well be
the
for her. Do you want to
challenge.
know, Christina, or should she quietly come in and then say hi afterwards?
I never like knowing when famous people, playwrights are in the audience. I don't even like knowing when my, parents would come to my plays. I don't even want to know when
Yeah.
that's happening. So
All
no.
right. So, Lindsay, now you know, if you sneak in,
I'll
let
sneak
her have
in.
her performance.
Yeah, and then I'll say hi. Real
And then go
stealth.
back and say, I'm here. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. And thank you both again. I owe you this. It's going to be easy to get to you, Christina. But Lindsay, if you do come here, please let me know,
Gonna
because
come get
you
it.
all
I'm
have
coming get
earned
it.
a behind the curtain
Look at
mug,
that.
which viewers can buy, by the way, at WGNTV.com/store, where you could also get the same logo on a shower curtain and a skateboard.
Shower curtain.
I have no idea
Sell a lot
why,
of
but
shower
yes.
curtains?
And an area rug, an area rug.
Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
And there's
Cool.
more. Anyway, I owe you that. Thank you both. Ugly Lies the Bone is playing at Shattered Glass through November 15th, just a couple of weeks to go. And tickets can be gotten. I do love the website. It's so easy. sgtheater.org. SG, Shattered Globe. SG Theater. Theater spelled the proper British way, TRE. sgtheater.org. Christina Gorman, just congratulations on an incredible performance that Lindsay will be so impressed by when she
Thank
gets
you.
here, and continue to break legs. And Lindsay, I know you've got a couple things going on there in New York with Queen of Versailles, and I'm sure F. Murray Abraham and Christian Chenoweth are just a handful to deal with. But while you're while you're dealing with getting that little play up on Broadway, break legs to you as well. It was an
Much.
honor
Thank you
to
for
talk
doing
to
this.
both of you. Thank you so. I want to send that right back to both of you. Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us, and thank you to everybody here for watching us on Paul Liston Behind the Curtain. Don't miss Ugly Lies the Bone. You have till November 15th. sgtheater.org. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.